Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 38, Text 6. How's the sound in the back?
Good.
Good? Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Actually, I'll do this. Start with text 5. My Vamma Mata. Amaivamama tamasyapi sad eva chuta darshanam hiyamana kala nadya kvachit tariti kasjana. But enough of such thoughts. After all, even a fallen soul like me can have the chance to behold the infallible Supreme Lord. For one of the conditioned souls being swept along in the river of time may sometimes reach the shore. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vanshakalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasa Degor Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama. So today, mostly, I'm going to go verse by verse and have kind of a strategy to finish the Leela.
Maharaj, it's not loud enough.
It isn't loud enough, huh?
Not the people are loud.
Okay, thank you so much. That's why I asked at the beginning. Hare Krishna, is it loud enough now?
Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay. And I'll try to cover the Leela. It's interesting, I started this Leela in Vrindavan, where I spoke on it for 30 days. Then Mayapur for 8 days and here for 5 days. It reminds me of a statement by the author Pasquale, Jayadvaita Maharaj once. I had someone else saying that, but it was author Pasquale. He said, I'm sorry my letter was so long, but I didn't have time to write it. I didn't have time to make it shorter. Yeah, that's right. Thank you. I didn't have time to make it shorter, which means that, it's kind of interesting to keep on condensing something and challenging you to actually know the subject more. So I think we can finish it. Just make a kind of just two comments on the retreat itself. I do feel we had people really entered into the retreat, and I think when that happens and you're engaged in this chanting and hearing process all day long, it's kind of like the realization that I don't want it to end, but even if it ended today, you know, it'd be worth it. Or the realization that, that that type of feeling is there. Which and it really gives you a kind of sense of what you can accomplish in your consciousness when you're actually fixed. I think maybe today or tomorrow, for those who are not on my Monday morning greetings, I write one article every week with some of the same realizations that I'm sharing in the class. But the last one was how to get taste for Krishna consciousness. And I think it's really relevant here. And I had the revelation. There was two kind of revelations. One, ruchi or taste comes after nishta. When you're fixed, you have taste. And that's also consistent with how the Yoga Sutras describes practice, which is concentration over a period of time without any interruption and in the right mood. And only when there's practice, that type of practice, do you get realization. And in the process of bhakti, what is that realization? It's of your relationship with Krishna. The prayojana. Our prayojana, our goal, is our relationship with Krishna. Sambandha, basically we have three categories of knowledge in any philosophy, but applied to Krishna consciousness. Sambandha, it's basically a metaphysics. What is your conception of reality? And then there's an abhideya. How do you realize that reality? And for us, of course, our conception of reality is Krishna and Krishna's energies. Our abhideya, again, our method of realizing it is bhakti, because God is a person and a person is only revealed in love. You want to realize God. You want to realize the personality of God. You have to love God. And then God reveals himself. Tesham satate yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tuam. Yesha. One who worships me with love and devotion, I give myself them. That's how we realize God. And what is the priyojana? The priyojana is realizing God fully. Then you realize God. But what does realizing God mean? Because God's a person. It's not just realizing God. It's feeling your relationship with God. Prema, love, is basically an energy that exists between two people in relationship. The highest love is Tvasmin Parama Prema Rup. The highest form of love is love of Godhead. So when we actually realize God by practicing devotion, we feel God. We feel our energy. We feel that relationship with God. And in the Gita, I'm not sure what chapter Prabhupada, in one of his purports, he says, when you become Krishna conscious, you're thrilled at every moment. Because you're feeling your relationship with Krishna. So, this nishta, when you become steady, when you become fixed, then you have realization. And that realization is taste for Krishna, a feeling for God. And I thought of an interesting analogy to kind of explain this relationship between nishta and ruchi. And I thought in the Gita, Krishna says, Rasam apsokontiam, I am the taste of water. So I was just trying to, what's the taste of water? I thought you get taste when you add some, sugar and lemon or something. What does it mean, that the taste of water? What does it mean, the taste of water? Actually, the taste of water is when water is just water. And that was my realization going to Rishikesh for the first time, where you get the water that's coming from the mountains before it goes down the plains and mixes with the minerals. When water is just water, it's tasty. When bhakti is just bhakti, it's tasty. It's nishta. We get a taste. And therefore, when we're in these retreats and our life is just bhakti, specifically Sarup Siddhi Bhakti, chanting and hearing all day, in a way that facilitates us to do it, then we have taste. So we should have that understanding and realization of how we do get taste. Even in your individual practices, if you want taste, you have to concentrate. Even if you only have a half hour a day, it should be done with focus and concentration, and then there'll be some realization, some taste. Okay. So now we'll go to where we were. Akrura is leaving for Vrindavan. He's feeling so fortunate. Later, there's a term in the book, it's so interesting. It says, Ati Anugraha. Ati means unlimited, basically. What's that? Extreme. So just like you have a Maharati, means he can fight with 1,000 warriors, one person. But you have someone like Arjuna, he's Atirati. Because he has astras, there's no amount of people that he can't really fight. So the term was used as ati anugraha, extreme mercy. And he got extreme mercy from who? From Kamsa. Because Kamsa is the one that's sending him to Vrindavan. So he's on the chariot and he's just kind of reflecting ati anugraha, by the extreme mercy of Kamsa. And therefore his conclusion is, this must be the will and mercy of Krishna. Because look how he's giving me this mercy by Kamsa, who says, hey, Akrura, point. See this chariot here, new one? You can ride that chariot. He grabs him affectionately by the hand. Akrura. And then says, Soumya, you're so gentle. Akrura, you're not cruel. And when a materialist person thinks that, they think only in relationship to themselves. So you'll assist me. And then he gets on the chariot. And tremendous devotion. Bhaktim Param for the lotus-eyed Krishna, for the one who is, his glories cannot even be described in this world. And I'm just going to give the lotus term, because the lotus is soft, the lotus is fragrant, the lotus is beautiful, and it looks transcendental. So lotus Krishna, lotus feet, lotus eye, lotus Krishna. It's the only word I can think of. But to such a person who is lotus eye, then bhaktim param, ubhagata, experience param bhakti, unlimited bhakti. Unlimited bhakti is to Krishna, and I am experiencing that. Practically more than I contain in my consciousness. And then he began to think, how is this possible? What pious deeds have I performed? Arate datam. I must have given charity, which means I must have served a great soul. It has to be mercy. because there is no way that I can earn this. And in fact, once you have that consciousness, you don't understand Krishna. Because once you think, I can earn Krishna, then how valuable are you thinking Krishna is? No matter how good you are, no matter how many rounds you do, no matter how many books you just do, no matter how many service you do, if you think that by my effort I can attain Krishna, I have earned Krishna, then you don't understand Krishna. And therefore, when one becomes arrogant like this, they never get Krishna. It doesn't matter how much sadhana they do, if they have this arrogance that I can earn Krishna by my lakhs of rounds, by this, by that, then they can't get Krishna because they're not understanding what Krishna is, who Krishna is, that I can earn Krishna. So he's thinking it must be mercy. And that's the mood of a Vaishnava's practice. He's not just offering paraphernalia. He's not even just offering mantra. He's offering his heart. And actually, this is a great solace to Kamsa, to Akrura. Because when he starts to travel towards there, and we're seeing all his mind, his aspiration, his humility, his utmost appreciation for Krishna, his hopes, his desires. And when he's going there on the chariot, then he starts to think, I don't know. I am the servant of Kamsa. I am the servant of Kamsa. How am I going to be greeted? What are they going to think? Because one is the representative of someone. It's considered that he carries their will and has some affinity, attraction for what that person is. And I'm going to go into Vrindavan? And then all his friends are there, and they're going to see the representative of Kamsa? What are they going to think? How am I going to complete my mission to even speak to Krishna? They're not going to let me get even close to Krishna. But then he has another thought, which is very important also philosophically. But no, Krishna knows my heart. And that's important because we have to understand, it's not just the paraphernalia that we offer to God that he's accepting. He's accepting the consciousness. When things represent your consciousness, it's love, not just giving things. Let's say that a woman is really upset with her husband, but she's in some kind of patriarchal, traditional situation. She has to cook, right? And she's got the meal, and her husband sits down to deal, throws it on the table. It's not love. The ingredients are there, but it's not love. But if there's love, and someone is in love serving that, that's why in the spiritual world, there is sense gratification. I wouldn't put it in the negative term. There's sensual experience in the spiritual world. But the consciousness is different. How? It's like when you cook for someone, and I remember, I always have this experience, somehow or other, not a cook, but I have a little organizational ability, and I was in charge. One of my portfolios was in charge of the kitchens in Vrindavan. And we'd have these big feasts. We only had one kitchen with wood, which we called the black hole. And then we didn't even have a Prasadam hall. And then all of a sudden, thousands of people were coming for Prabhupada's. There's a particular year where there was some difficulty in ISKCON, and no one came to Vrindavan. They came at Gaur Purnima. Besides Gaur Purnima, when Prabhupada's on the planet, you did not see one ISKCON devotee outside of the people that resided in Vrindavan. It's only later, and even after Prabhupada left, everybody was in the temples, was only Gaur Purnima. And then the disruption in society, some leaders went, people needed shelter, and people started to pour into Vrindavan. And we had to, all of a sudden, we had for Prabhupada's disappearance festival and Govardhan Puja, these huge feasts without any facility. So I was in charge of organizing it. It was really difficult. Even we had to put everybody. We didn't have a Prasad hall. But we had great cooks like Bibi Govindaswamy, Vibhu Chaitanya, Narottamananda. We had some all-stars, some others. And we'd cook a gourmet feast for so many people and make sure it was served so nicely. And then after it was all finished in exhaustion, we'd sit down, Bibi Govindaswamy and myself and others, and we'd enjoy the feast, but in a different way than the people eating it. Because when you perform that service for other people's pleasure and you taste something, your consciousness is how they enjoyed it. So the spiritual world is like that. They see beautiful things, they taste beautiful things, but the consciousness is so pure. So it's the love, that's our thing. But Akrura said, no, he had that faith. Krishna sees the heart of everyone and he will accept my service. It's coming up like there. So then, now we're that was a little bit ahead, and so he's saying, I'm a materialistic person, and Krishna's Uttama Shloka. How's it possible? Considering who I am and what I've done, but then he says, Achyuta Darshanam. And we discussed this yesterday, but I think this point has to be discussed again and again. Achyuta Darshanam. But I'm going to see one who's infallible, and his kindness is infallible. And therefore, I can achieve Krishna. Even though he's so exalted, but my saving grace is with all his great qualities. Aho bhakiyam kulakuta sthanam. What's the full verse?
Aho bhakiyam sthana kala
kuta. Yeah. He's so merciful that even though Putana came to kill Krishna with poison on her breast, he accepted her as his mother, and she got the same destination. And when Sukadeva goes, don't play with the phone in front. And when Sukadeva Goswami, when he left home, and Vyasadev sent his students to find him, as Hari Parshad knows, there's a samskara. If you want to learn Sanskrit, you got to repeat it again and again and again and again and again and again. And you don't have time when you're studying it. You got to be real serious. So, okay, Gurudev, Vyasadev, we're going out to the forest to find. So they're revising their verses. And what are they learning? The Bhagavatam. And when they get to a few verses, when Sukadeva Goswami hears that, one is Krishna's Madhurya and one is Krishna's Audharya. Because he hears that verse, Tavakatam ritam tapta jivanam kavi birkatam kalmasapanam. What's the rest? Mangalam. What? Baharpidam natavarabhapu karniyo karni karyam bibrad vishad kanika kapi sam vaijayanti. The beauty of Krishna, the sweetness of Krishna, but also the mercy of Krishna. The two-pronged attraction of Krishna is Odarianism, his mercy. So all those qualities of Krishna that make him so inaccessible. What a relief he has one quality that makes him accessible, which is his compassion, his mercy. And then this is, we said, this is hope against hope. The no hope is Krishna's qualities. The hope is Krishna's qualities. The no hope is our, the no hope is our qualification. The hope is Krishna's qualification, that he's merciful. That we can achieve him by his mercy. But we shouldn't just think that because Krishna is merciful, that kindness is undeserved. Then by definition, we don't have to do anything. If it's just the path of grace means that there's nothing that we can do on our own, then why are we practicing? Why are we performing so much arduous austerities? Why are we tolerating so much? So I always thought about this and how to reconcile this. And sometimes you need to see the philosophy in the world before you can understand it in your head. And I was always thinking about this, because people say it's the path of mercy. I mean, there's examples that are given where people do nothing. Some persons, there's a story in one of the Puranas, someone's on a bullock cart and they're going to Vrindavan, and the bullock cart hits up and the person goes in the air and he lands on a horn. He gets, what is that word when someone is
impaled?
And he falls on a tulsi in Vrindavan. And then the Abhidhudas came. Well, I mean, we couldn't even get Ajamil. What to speak of this guy laying on a tulsi? I mean, we're not going to go through that again. Of course, Prabhupada also, he talked a lot about the honorary degree. It's possible. Don't try for it. It's rare. But still, it's the path of mercy. So this is what happened. I was called back to Vrindavan in the middle of the summer because someone was dying, and my presence was required. And a friend of mine said, look, I have something that I need in the market. So you go to the market for me. And I went to the market, and it was so hot, and I was sitting, you know, one of those shops. And then in those days, we were very poor. I remember in Vrindavan, it was even Maya to go buy a cold drink. And what to speak, we didn't even have money for it. So I was in a shop, and the shopkeeper said, of course, Vaishyas are allowed to lie, part of their duty. So he said, let me get you some, you want anything to drink? I said, yeah. And then I, in my mind, I envisioned he's going to get a glass of water because save money, squeeze a lemon and throw some sugar in. But I was real smart. And I had a real hankering then. And it was the first time it came in the market. I said, can you get me two fruities? These little mango drinks. And I was really hankering for these fruities for a long time. And I heard they came in the market. So he brings back the fruities, and I have two, and they're cold. And I take out that straw, and I put it in the fruity. And I'm about to... And a beggar boy comes to the shop. And, you know, because the shop's so high, I can only see him up to my chest. And he goes like this. And in my mind, I just want to enjoy my fruity. So I did my best to just go, get away. And it was powerful enough that he kind of left. And I was drinking my fruity like a monkey in Vrindavan who just got your glasses. Now they're in front of the MVT, by the way, if anybody's going to Vrindavan. And they only it will give back your glasses if you give them a fruity. They've upped the ante. And now they've really upped the ante, because after they drink their fruity, they give the glasses to their friend monkey. So now you have to give two fruities if you want your glasses back. So I was taking that fruity, and then as I looked in the distance, you know, when someone walks away from, he's blocked by the shop, as they walk away, you gradually can see more and more of their body. And then I saw him in the corner, and I saw he was so destitute, like really, really destitute. I didn't see it. And then I felt so bad, because I had two fruities. And then the phrase came in my mind from a film I saw when I was young with Marlon Brando called The Ugly American. I just said, oh my God, how selfish. And then I went to give him the other fruity, and I couldn't find him. But then I had an epiphany, a realization, that if I gave him the fruity, it would be mercy because he didn't earn the fruity, but there's something he did that caused me to give it to him. And that was his need, his legitimate poverty. And I thought, yes, this is what bhakti means. You cannot earn, you it's mercy, but you have to show Krishna your need. And that's called humility. And that has to be the voice of your chanting. And that has to be the consciousness and the understanding. And that's what the ego prevents us from having. The ego actually blocks, in many ways, Krishna's mercy, because it prevents us from expressing our need, and Krishna is merciful. And you can see that, you know, sometimes beggars come, and if you get this beggar, this guy's not a beggar. You know, when you see someone really sometimes, that you're so convinced this person is destitute and poor, he really should get something. And then you give him mercy. He didn't earn it, he didn't work, he didn't do anything for you, but he did something. So now this consciousness of Akrura, it's essential to get Vrindavan and to get the mercy of Krishna, the humility and the need in our heart. Of course, we don't discount Namballa, the strength of numbers. If you're actually chanting a lot, and the reason you're chanting a lot is because you're so desperate for Krishna's mercy, it's like you're before a door that's locked and you're stuck in the rain and you're banging on the door and you continue banging on the door and you're screaming on the door, let me in, I'm freezing, I'm raining. So it has an effect when you continue it. It's not that it's we don't have to make the effort. And then he says here, and you know, I can, just like the Kala Naja, the river of time. And someone crosses the shore. And the interesting thing is, it doesn't matter how long they've been in the river of time. If you chant the holy name sincerely and you surrender to Krishna, it's finished. A room can be dark for 500,000 years. If you turn on the light, it's finished. So the ignorance is so long. And that's the beauty. Well, that's really the mercy of Prabhupada. Brahmanda Brahmate, Konya Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai, Bhakti Lata Bij. Wandering the universe, species of life after species of life, universe after universe, and then by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, the switch is turned on. And that's called Shraddha, the attraction for the holy name of Krishna. So now, I'll read the next verse. Mamadyama Mangalam nashtam falavam chaiva me bhava yanamasye bhagavato yogi jayangri pankajam. So now he's realizing a Achyuta Darshanam. Krishna is infallible. He is merciful. And how do I know? Today, I'm going to Vrindavan. And what does that mean? It means a mangalam. My sinful reactions have been eradicated. And Falavan, I've got the fruit of life. It's not an ordinary thing to attain the holy Dham. And he just goes on and on. He can't believe his mercy because he says the yogis, Pantastu Koti Sata Vatsara Sampagamyo Vayora Tapi Manaso, millions of years by the speed of mind. They don't attain this. At best, yogi did. They can meditate on the feet of Krishna. Pankajam, the lotus-like feet of Krishna. They can meditate on it. But I am going to pay my obeisances. I've attained more than the yogis. So difficult. And this fruit, you can have no fruit, you can have a poisonous fruit of your activities. So the fruit tells about your activities. If you have a garden and there's very beautiful roses that come up, or the fruits are coming out up lush, it says a lot about what you've done. Oh, you've cultivated the land. In Mayapur, there used to be the supreme, and Pancharat knows this, the supreme personality of gardener. You remember him?
Kanva.
An amazing guy. And you know, before the TOVP was built there, the gardens in Mayapur were practically the seventh wonder of the world. And this guy had such a green thumb. then he would figure out by gardening how to get particular vegetables on the market 3 weeks before anybody else. And I won't go into stories about Kamba, but they're very entertaining. Because the hippies, before the hippies were the beatniks. And he came from the beatnik generation. And he had Jagannath tattoos on his arm. So whenever you go to the bathroom, and he'd wear like a gumshoe so it wouldn't offend. And he used to talk in beatnik language, but that's another story. But when you saw his garden, the fruit that he got, you knew the knowledge he had. Professors were coming from all over West Bengal to figure out his secrets. But this is Fulavan possesses, I have possessed the fruit because my sinful activity. Although he's not saying today, you know, only my sinful activity has been destroyed, but the whole process of my life has led to this. Yesham twantikatam papam jananam punya karmanam. Yesham twantikatam papam. What does that mean? Yesham twantikatam papam.
For whom all sinful reactions of the past have been completely vanquished.
Yesham twantikatam papam jananam punya karmanam. Those who are extremely pious in their behavior, all their sinful activities have been destroyed. Yesham twantikatam papam jananam pun te dvandva moha nirmukta. What is that?
They become completely free of all dualities.
All dualities.
And all illusions.
And then what's the result? Bhajanti mam. Yesham twantikatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajanti mam dridhabrata. And then my practices have become so fixed. So this is what he's saying. They're finished because now I'm in Vrindavan. And I'm going to offer my obeisances. In Bhakti Sandarbha, it says that obeisances are in the item of Padasevanam. And Jiva Goswami says that our consciousness when we pay obeisances should be, I am inferior. This is better than me. And you should feel it. Pay obeisances to the Vaishnavas, to the holy Dham, to the deities, with the consciousness. Indeed, today King Kamsa has shown me extreme mercy by sending me to see the lotus feet of Lord Hari, who has now appeared in this world. Simply by the effulgence of his toenails, many souls in the past have transcended the insurmountable darkness of material existence and achieved liberation. So he's not just singing about the Lord's glories, or he is, but he's expressing astonishment how this mercy has come. Did anybody here ever have the Ati Anugraha of Kamsa in your life? The extreme mercy coming from Duryodhana to Vidura. Destiny is the language of God. And sometimes he has to speak loudly to us. And he speaks through the voice of someone who can speak loudly. So he's saying, this is incredible. And he keeps on talking about the lotus feet. And he says, again, I'm going to pay obeisances. And what are these feet? Simply by the effulgence, which means the happiness of serving Krishna. Just by that connection. Many souls in the past have transcended the insurmountable darkness of material existence. Think about how insurmountable material existence is. And Duratiyam, Tama, what is it? Boga. Bogeshwarya Pasaktanam. Enjoyment, liberation. We want liberation. So again, bhutva paliyate. You look at the Bhagavad Gita, right? It describes the world destroyed again and again and again and again and again and again. And we're doing the same thing. How insurmountable is that? With a child building a sandcastle on the edge of the ocean, and the ocean is coming in, and we're digging the troughs, and the water is coming in, and we dig another trough and another trough, and the water comes, and then the sandcastle is destroyed. And then we make it again. Bhutva, puliyate. Prabhupada describes the material existence. He has some nice phrases. He said, you know, after Mahavishnu breathes out all the universes, that's trillions of years, and he breathes them in again, and then you become merged in the Mahatattva, which Prabhupada said is the collective false ego. So we have a lot of false ego association. And then he breathes out. We come out again with that same false ego. And what's the false ego? The basic premise of the false ego is superiority. I want it, and I'm going to do anything for it. And therefore, the worst thing you can tell me is that I'm wrong. It's like we saw Tota Gopinath Darshan, these priests were arguing in front of the altar because someone said to them, you're wrong. No, I'm not wrong. Insurmountable. What is it? That desire is so strong. And Prabhupada said, when Vishnu breathes out the universes, Prabhupada, he gave two terms from two different purports. One is the Vedic adventure. You know, you go into Van Ashram and 100 births like this and that, and so many ways. Dharmasya yapavargasya. Dharma is for liberation. And how is Dharma for liberation? Commentators say a very interesting thing on this verse. That if you're pious, then you'll welcome people into your home, and one day a Vaishnava may come. Dharmasya yapavargasya. So the Vedic adventure, it kind of makes you humble, makes you respectful, it gives you different culture, but it's all set up for this. And if you're fortunate, you will catch the truth. You will catch the truth. But what happens? We're still trying to catch it. Do you know how many times we've been in this Vedic adventure trying to catch the truth, doing the same thing again and again and again and again and again, until Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavaj Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti, till that Bhakti Lata Beej comes. And what is the Bhakti Lata Beej? Some attraction to something else but being controlling and enjoying this world. An attraction for serving the Supreme Lord and serving others. Just like Akura has been described as Mahamati, the great mind. What do you think is a great mind? Who are the people you think have a great mind? It's not just intellectuals. It's one who, and if they have knowledge, it's like fruits on a tree that cause the tree to bend. Like the trees in the Vrindavan forest, the stately trees, as Krishna comes into the forest of Vrindavan, the trees, with their beautiful flowers, the trees start to bend to the feet of Krishna. So insurmountable. Insurmountable. But so many people in the past, by the effulgence of Krishna's lotus feet, not it says here the Nakula Mandala, it's all the 10 toes, and the effulgence, when they come together, it's like a cluster that's very beautiful. And just some effulgence from that to attract us to that service. And that's why Prabhupada's movement is so dynamic. I know when in New York, they have the New York City Harinam, and they have a great spot in Union Square. It's like you're sitting here doing kirtan, and where the chairs are is where the subway is, and as many people that are sitting there are coming out minute by minute. It's the best Harinam spot in the world, and the kirtan is going on. And Ram Roy told me one of his pleasures is to watch the people get the Bhakti Lata Beej. You know, who knows what happened? They had a fight with their wife, and then they lost their job. You know, and something happened to them. Whatever Krishna does to kind of condition us to be a little humble, to open our hearts. And then at that moment, they walk up the stairs, and they hear Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then they go like this. And then you look 15, 20 minutes later, they're still like this. Or if they become embarrassed that they're looking at the Hare Krishnas, then they turn to the side. But you get a half hour and they're still there and you go, the Bhakti Lata Beej has come into their hearts. The attraction for Krishna, so he's just astounded. And then he starts to meditate on his fortune. Again, this is Mano Rita. These are the kind of thoughts that we have to have, an attraction we have to have, to actually move us towards Vrindavan. It's special to come to Vrindavan, but to have the consciousness of Vrindavan is actually more important. I remember in Vrindavan there was a famous scholar, and he was speaking on Vrindavan Mahimamrita. And someone I knew, several people I knew, would go to hear this person speak in Madantar. And I knew several people that would hear him. So one, I said, okay, let me hear what he has to say. So he had one quote. Is that, you know, how glorious Vrindavan is, Vrindavan Mahimamrita, etc. So I'm checking him out, what he says, but he said something nice. He said, but if you leave Vrindavan to give Vrindavan, that place is none different than Vrindavan. And that was Prabhupada's teachings. So now he has his mind, and see what his mind is. He says, those lotus feet are worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods. I'm going to be paying obeisances to those feet. And they're worshipped by the demigods, by the goddess of fortune, by the great sages, and the Vaishnavas. So those feet, the Brahma, Shiva, they're the reservoir of all opulence. They're worshipped by the goddess of fortune. They're the reservoir of all fortune. They're worshipped by the great sages. They're the reservoir and conclusion of all intellect. And the Vaishnavas, they're the reservoir of all devotion. The most loving object, the most conclusion of all your intellect object, the most opulent object, the most fortunate object. And I am going to pay obeisances. Ati anugraha. How? By the inconceivable mercy, the extreme mercy of Kamsa. This is astounding. And then he begins to meditate. Well, what do those feet do? Upon those lotus feet, the Lord walks about the forest while herding the cows with his companions. Those feet. Those feet are smeared with the kumkum from the gopis' breasts. This is a little bit different because he's meditating and those feet worship the gopis. Otherwise, he's saying everyone worships those feet. But now how exalted are those feet? These feet worship the gopis. Surely I shall see the face of Lord Mukunda, since the deer are now walking past me on my right. That face, framed by his curly hair, is beautified by his attractive cheeks and nose, his smiling glances, and his reddish eyes. So he says, Drakshyami Nunam Sukupola Nasikam. I am going to see Nunam, certainly. I'm going to see him. And why am I going to see him? Because the deer are now walking on my right. Now, there is a science of omens. It's a fact. I know myself. I know a little bit about what's happening in the future sometimes. For the man, it's inauspicious if the left side trembles, twitches, and the woman, the right side, is inauspicious in opposite ways around. So it's just some things that I know something's going on because this signal is there. And I heard one modern commentator. Actually, I had a comment. I read something by Radha Govindaswamy. He described it like a car. You know, if something's wrong, the light goes on. You don't put on your seatbelt, the light goes on. So there's auspicious and inauspicious omens. It's probably not good to see like a donkey on your right side or something like that. But the deer is considered very, very auspicious. I was once going on parikram with a sadhu in Vrindavan, and we were driving, and a snake came across the road from our right side, something. Somehow he said, oh, this would be very good. And it said also, not only that, but if the deer... It's not only a deer's walking on the side, but the deer is stopping and staring. And there's somehow or other auspicious signs in a deer's eyes that if they look, it's really auspicious. You know what the most auspicious thing is? Because I did a little study about this, is if you see a Brahmin coming towards you with Shastra. So then I had an idea, you know, I kind of didn't, you know, book distribution, the airports, then we disturb a lot of people. But then I thought, wait a second. All these American businessmen were seeing Brahmins with books. So their life became completely auspicious. Because all these Brahmins, they kept on seeing the books, the Bhagavatams. And that didn't happen in any country. So now you see how America has so much money. They had all these great souls, actually. So many great souls. Atita Guna, they would see her with her books. Still see her with her books. Amazing. The Port Authority, right? People coming in by the buses, right? And the devotees there. And so auspiciousness somehow. Seeing all the Shastra. And then that face framed by his curly hair. And one acharya described what Krishna's curly hair is like. They said, for the gopis, his curly hair is like a noose, and his smile is like the bait. Yeah. So they come in and they get caught by Krishna. So he said, I will see him. And then I'm going to see the Supreme Lord Vishnu, the reservoir of all beauty, who by his own sweet will has now assumed a human-like form to relieve the earth of her burden. Thus there is no denying that my eyes will achieve the perfection of their existence. Isn't there a verse about the eyes? Akshino, something like that. You know that verse? I think so. Someone... Yeah, what does that mean?
The perfection of my eyes is Vardarshan, and then it goes on.
There's another verse, Bhaktivinoda, where he describes Krishna as Radhikakshi Mahotsavam, or the festival for right around his eyes.
So the reservoir of all beauty, and the Sanskrit for that is very interesting. It says Lavanya Dhamna. Dhamna means of the abode, like Dham, of Lavanya, like Lavan Bashka, which is salt. But I guess the word salt also can refer to sweet, because when you have a preparation, it only becomes tasty when you add salt. So it's Lavanya Dhamna. Okay, you said something?
Actually, Lavanya is described in the Ujjwal Nilmani. That term is specifically described in the Ujjwal Nilmani, where Rupa Goswami says that if there is a string of pristine white pearls and gives a wavy radiance of effulgence, that wavy radiance of effulgence coming from each and every part of the body of an individual is technically known as Lavanya.
I'll repeat that. He said in the Ujjvala Nilamani, which is Rupa Goswami's treatise on Madhurya Ras, he says Lavan also can indicate like a string of pearls, which each one has kind of an unlimited effulgence.
Wavy
effulgence. Waves of effulgence. And when a person has that kind of that kind of effulgence from each and every part of his body, that's called Lavan. So he is the Dham, the abode of the waves of sweetness coming from every part of his body. So it's described there. And he also, previously he said, also, I shall see the face of Mukunda. And Mukunda means, da means give, muk means mukti, the face that gives liberation because it's so beautiful, it attracts you. But also Mukunda means, kunda means these little white flowers. Muk means the face. So it's described that the Brijabasis, that's really the beauty of Krishna. They see his smile. They see his smile. And how beautiful it is. And he says, because what's happening now, his thirst is increasing. Now he's thinking, oh, I'll never see Krishna. Now he says, I will see Krishna. And then he says, I will pay obeisances to Krishna. And the yogis, they're so great, they're meditating on it. And I'll see those feet, the abode of all opulence, the abode of all fortune, the abode of all intellect, the abode of all devotion, those feet that are walking with Krishna and the breast of the gopis, I will see. Now he's becoming more ambitious. Now I will see the face of Mukunda with his beauty and his smiling glances. And the term for smiling is also interesting too. And I read this in one commentary and I thought it was very interesting that it said that there's two terms that are contrasting, smita and hasya. Smita is when the smile, the teeth don't show. And hasya is when the teeth show. So hasya is when the cause of the smile is external and everybody laughs. But when the cause of the smile is your own internal goodness, then the teeth don't show. And if you think about it, you probably know one person that's so happy and blissful that, you know, they just have this smile. And that's real beauty. Because that's the type of beauty, the karmic beauty that someone gets because they really want to please others. There can be a physical beauty that you've kind of karmically got because you want to control and enjoy others. So now you have that image of Krishna Smita. He's just so internally satisfied. And he's the reservoir of all beauty. And it's described that Krishna is so beautiful that if someone looks at him, if the gopis look at him once, they'll never look at another person the rest of their life. And then his beauty is so great that the poets describe that when the moon hears that Krishna's face is described as a moon, the moon becomes so embarrassed that it becomes the dark moon. The moon will not show its face. And it was so embarrassed by being by Krishna's face being compared to the moon. So embarrassed that it's afraid to come out. So it just comes out by little phases. So I saw that yesterday or something. It was just after the new moon or something. It was like a little crescent. I thought of that. The moon is embarrassed. Now it's seeing if it can come out. Okay, the topic kind of changes a little bit now, just briefly, and it's often done that way. And here, even in the 10th canto. And I always remember this commentary by Madhvacharya in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavatam, where Krishna's play with the cowherd boys are being described. And then this verse comes, Krishna is otam protam. He's the otam protam means horizontal and vertical threads for a cloth. So he's otam protam. So what is otam protam? So Madhvacharya, he kind of describes that why in the middle of Leela, in the middle of beautiful face of Krishna's curling hair, his beauty is so great, then there's some description of it, of his opulence. And Madhvacharya's commentary was on this was very brilliant. He said that the foundation of every relationship with Krishna is dasya or servitude. And for one who is specially conditioned soul, dasya is inspired by aishvarya or opulence. So unless the descriptions of opulence are put within the descriptions of sweetness, someone reading it may lose their reverence or mood of servitude and therefore lose the pot in which all other relationships. Because what is Madhurya Ras? Madhurya Ras is there's sidelong glances and there's embraces, but what is the consciousness? How Krishna can be pleased. So it has nothing to do with the material intensity of the form. If I want to squeeze out some pleasure in this, these senses. So tomorrow there'll be, not many, there'll be just one or two verses about the opulence of Krishna. Okay, so I generally, good. My plan is working, that I like to leave at least 15 minutes for discussions and we can go there. Krishna Kshetra? No, we'll start with you. It's okay. You're right there. Any point that struck you? The mic? Okay, who's going to do this? Jai Gora?
Hare Krishna. You spoke in the beginning about Ashabandha, and I think you mentioned it yesterday also, and I was struck yesterday by your translation of Ashabandha as how was it? Unrestricted
hope
cannot be bound.
Ashabandha means the bond of hope.
Yeah, that's how I understood it. The bond of hope. And then Prabhupada translates it as hope against hope, which is this English expression which you mentioned today. Very nicely pointing out the hope is Krishna's mercy, the against hope is our own effort. And I was thinking about Akrura's, the whole account of Akrura going to Vrindavan is very much about his anticipation. And that sense of anticipation, how is that related with hope? Or in this case, more specifically, hope against hope, which that Ashabandha is, if I remember right, one of the nine characteristics of bhava. Yeah. So what's going on here? I'm wondering. The anticipation, the hope against hope, the overcoming of the against side, it's a very rich
concept
thing that's going on.
The anticipation is Krishna's mercy, but the anticipation also is just as the straw may, find the shore in the river of time. Basically, it's anything is possible, and then I have hope. You want a reflection, Madhavan? Any
I really appreciated your bringing this aspect of how that expressing and presenting our need, presenting our situation attracts Krishna's mercy. Like you were talking about the path of grace, the path of mercy, and often I think about it. What is our effort is to receive that, to be open to it, to like the analogy of the rope is thrown to you, but you have to take hold of it. So Krishna's mercy is being offered, but we have to be willing to accept it. But that other dimension that you brought in of laying ourselves bare, laying ourselves, expressing like we're singing every morning, Mosamo Patita Prabhu,
that
mood that
exemplifies the mood that you need for Krishna's mercy. And when you chant verses like that, you actually can feel Krishna's mercy.
So that I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Jai Vedmaj, any reflection?
I appreciated that point that you made about tasting service, that or how one enjoys by service. The people are sitting for the feast and everybody's enjoying, but the servers get a different kind of taste, a more appreciative taste, because they're tasting how those who sat enjoyed.
And they're also relishing sensually. This is very tasty. This has this preparation in it. And I remember sitting there with Bibi Govinda Swami and wasn't taking much. That's the whole thing. Mm. Because the sensual thing was the inspiration for the internal, which was the real pleasure. So you got both.
I was also taken by what you said about our qualification being our need, but more than that, our willingness to express that need or our ability to overcome the ego in order to express that need. And it made me think about some forms of Christianity, there's this doctrine of vicarious atonement, the idea that you don't have to do anything because Jesus already did it for you. But if you become prideful in the idea that you have received this kind of grace, then you don't express your need for that grace, and therefore the idea that you don't have to do anything, not by works alone, becomes a kind of incomplete idea. And so we have something to offer or compliment. It made me think that someone of the Christian faith who accepts Jesus as their Savior has a moral obligation to act in a way that would be pleasing to their Savior. And from the standpoint of connecting what we have in our bhakti yoga philosophy, how it complements other forms of faith, that would be one way that we have something to add in terms of, it's not all about your endeavor, but if you're not acting in a way that expresses the depth of your need and your appreciation for the gift you've been given, then something's missing and you won't have that experience within your own heart of the great gift that you've been offered.
Thank you. I think this is such an interesting application of our philosophy, things that we highlight that may be applied in other places. and perhaps the other way around sometimes. Like, for example, even Buddhism, they're atheists. They have a lot of understanding of the mind and how the mind works. So I think that's there. Can Mother Nanda, if you could, over here. I'll make one other point, too, what you said.
Thank you.
Lord Chaitanya's guru told them that the essence of the Bhagavatam, a verse that expresses the essence of the Bhagavatam, is Evam Vrtaswa Priya Nama Krita Jachanuraga. In this way, without any of an inhibition, without any attachment. And that's what you were expressing, that the ego can prevent that expression of the need. And bhakti is everything about it. Without any inhibition, without any attachment to glorify Krishna and express our heart in a humble way. Mother Nanda? Yeah.
Maharaj, there are several little big points that you made that caught my attention. One of them was when you were explaining the point about the false ego and how ignorance, that the room can be dark for half a million years, and as soon as the light comes on, it doesn't matter because the light's on. That is so encouraging.
It's encouraging in the same sense. That's called Sharanagati. That surrender is really the point that we're always trying to get. Mm-hmm. And when we go deep in our own practices, and there's a point, well, how to go further? Mm-hmm. And then we hear that word.
Yeah.
And if someone does that, you know, but Prabhupada said, what did he say? If you say to Krishna, from this day I am yours, it's a wow.
And just one other point, among the many points, was ati anugraha, the extreme mercy that he was getting from Kamsa. And that's also very profound, because the more we look for Krishna's mercy in our life, the more we'll see it, no matter what source it comes from. It might seem like it comes from, you know, calamity, this, that, so many things, or unfairness. This wasn't fair. I didn't deserve it. But it's mercy coming. I appreciate that. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Any point that really struck
you to share a point? Just something that I'm very familiar with. Like people coming up the stairs and from Union Square, from the station, and when they hear the chanting, whatever they've done before, that's the bhakti lata bish that is in their heart. So I like that very much. And the book distributors there do very, very well. I remember once, the last time I was there, I was speaking to like a hippie, and I was just speaking to him about Krishna consciousness, but I didn't think about giving him a book. And then I went and did some book distribution, and when I came back, there they were. They gave him 7 books.
You know?
Yeah. They gave him 7 books, and the guy was bringing out all these $20 notes, and I was thinking, I did all the preaching, and the other person got the mercy. So another thing is that the most auspicious thing is seeing a Brahmin with a book. Okay, so I remember once being in the Boston airport. And, of course, Boston is where all the big universities are. So I would ask different people, you know, are you from the university? And one man said, yes, I'm a scientist at Harvard. So I thought, okay, I'll ask him, what's the difference between a dead body and a live body? And he's like, I never thought of it. I don't know. Oh, I know. it's the absence of chemicals. So then I gave him a Bhagavad Gita. I said, really, you've got to read this. You've got to read this because it tells you, you know, everything aham brahmasmi. Horrible.
Any other ladies have something struck you? Which point struck you?
Thank you so much for your lecture. Actually, I like 2 points. First, that you don't understand Krishna if you want to achieve him. Because when you think that you have to count more or you have to wake up early, and that means that you don't get him, like you don't understand him. And the other one is when you leave Vrindavan to give Vrindavan, it's the great one. Because as you said always, it's better to stay at home and think about Vrindavan than being Vrindavan and think about your problem at your home and family. So this too, it was like amazing. Thank you.
That Krishna's hair is like the nose, yeah? And his mouth is like, how in English, the bait, yes. Oh.
Okay, we have any of the men here has a reflection?
I wanted to add something about that point about Asha Bandha, because Srila Rupa Goswami gives a very beautiful imagery about Asha Bandha. He says if the stem of a lotus is broken into two, and then these threads come out, very fine threads. If the stem of a lotus,
is
broken, you see these tiny threads.
Tiny
threads. Yeah. Rupa Goswami says, my Asha Bandha, my bond of hope, is like that. It's so thin. But no matter how much you extend it, it never seems to break. It becomes thinner and thinner, but never seems to break.
What a great analogy. You hear that?
Yeah.
Great. It's like you break a rose?
Lotus. Yeah.
It's very thin thread. So that's like our hope. It's very thin. But as you stretch it, it just, you can't break it.
Yes.
So even though it's so thin, it still remains. Okay, we have some announcements. I did manage to finish. I just want to mention some other things.
Can you just stand up for a second? Yeah. Okay. Your name? Say.
Yasmin.
She came from
Iran.
You can hear. She came from Iran. And right there now, I know that personally, they're actually starting to bring some devotees in and question them. And they have two types of police. They have the government police and the religious police. So the devotees themselves have stopped communicating with each other now. And it's become very, very austere. And even we would have had a lot more people here coming from Iran, but they're a little bit apprehensive. So she just made a request. If you take pictures, don't post her picture. Because a lot of times you can choose what pictures to put on, but look at her. If you, and you know, she's very serious about that because it's so dangerous. Actually, you know, they can, apostasy, is that the word? Yeah, that's punishable by death. So be careful of what you post and just make sure her picture is not posted. Okay. A few devotees still have not registered, and the ashram needs to finalize our registration today. Please come and register today with Jamuna Pavani. What?
I didn't make the payment for accommodation.
Yeah. Yeah, even if you've received a scholarship, by the donations that people gave, we were able to accommodate people who normally wouldn't be able to afford it. So even those people have to register. Okay, the fathers have asked to keep the door to the roof closed to prevent the monkeys from coming into the ashram. Please close the doors when you come down from the roof after you made sure no one else is up there. Well, just don't put the latch. Just shut the door. I mean, don't lock it. Okay. Okay, okay. Okay. Anybody needs money exchanged, Manoranjan is going to Bhuvaneshwar tomorrow to exchange money. If you need rupees, please see him today. He'll be able to give you the exchange rates by 10 a.m. Just before we leave, he'll be here. Okay. We're going on an outing tomorrow to a village where there's a small Jagannath Mandir. And people have appreciated just going and seeing these beautiful villages and doing Harinam in those villages. And there's a Jagannath Mandir. We're going in small buses, and we need to know how many want to come. We'll leave tomorrow at 6:15 from Ishopanti and be back by 1:30. Those who want to go, please sign up with Jagannath Priya. Okay, she'll be there this morning before leaving on Parikram. She'll be at the entrance.
It's really important that everybody signs up now before we leave, otherwise we can't order the buses.
Okay. Okay, dry Jagannath Mahaprasad. You can... to take with you is available in different sizes. You can ask for a small box containing 10 or a box of 50 or 100. You can go to Sesha the cook and he'll directly bring that to you. Or when he's not around, he'll leave it with Jagannath Priya. Okay? Okay. This afternoon, Hari Parshad Prabhu is giving a talk on Gauranga Mahaprabhu relishing the moods of Radha. And that's part one. He'll have another lecture. And what time does it begin? What?
4:20.
Okay, it'll begin at 4:20 today in here? Because he'll use PowerPoint, etc. In the conference room. Please come on time to encourage him. And Mahaprasadam feast today is sponsored by Mohini Murti. Where's Mohini Murti? Okay. In the name of her daughter, Garima, right? Is that it? Okay. So, okay. Yeah. What? What? Oh, taxi list. If anyone would like help to leave Ishopanti by taxi for Bhuvaneshwar Airport, please sign your name with your flight departure time on the notice board at the entrance so we can order the taxis in advance. So that means if you're going with a few friends, just say the name and this, we need one taxi. Not, okay? All right, so we can start the prasad exactly at 10 o'clock. We still have about 9 o'clock. Come on.
Different time zone.
What?
You're in a different time zone.
It's either one of two things. It's either Madhanaika Mahabhav or it's the beginning stages of dementia. I can't.
Mahabhav.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Also, my book, if you haven't got it,
if you want my book, here it is, the Kirtan Sutras. I'll have some of them right before you go out, if you want to come before you leave for the kirtan. Okay? And everybody be at the kirtan at 10 to 10, especially the kirtaneers, because we're going to leave exactly at 10 o'clock. Did I get the times right? Okay.
I haven't heard.